A Clockwork Orange, Disc 4.
That very same evening, I was dragged down nice and gentle by brutal toll-chocking chassos to Viddy the Governor in his Holy of Holies holy office. The Governor looked very weary at me and said, "I don't suppose you know who that was this morning, do you, 6655321? And without waiting for me to say no, he said that was no less a personage than the Minister of the Interior. The new Minister of the Interior, and what they call a very new broom. Well, these new ridiculous ideas have come at last, and orders are orders, though I must say to you in confidence that I do not approve. I most emphatically do not approve. An eye for an eye, I say. If someone hits you, you hit back, do you not? Why then, should not the state, very severely hit by you, brutal hooligans, not hit back also? But the new view is to say no. The new view is that we turn the bad into the good, all of which seems to me grossly unjust. So I said, trying to be like respectful and accommodating, "Sir." And then the chief chasso, who was standing all red and burly behind the governor's chair, creeched, "Shut your filthy hole, you scum!" All right," said the like tired and fagged out governor. "You, 6655321, are to be reformed. Tomorrow, you go to this man Brodsky. It is believed that you will be able to leave state custody in a little over a fortnight. In a little over a fortnight, you will be out again in the big free world, no longer a number. I suppose," and he snorted a bit here, "that prospect pleases you." I said nothing, so the chief chasso creeched,
"Answer, you filthy young swine, when the governor asks you a question."
So I said, "Oh, yes, sir, thank you very much, sir. I've done my best here, really I have. I'm very grateful to all concerned." "Don't be," like sighed the governor. "This is not a reward. This is far from being a reward. Now, there is a form here to be signed. It says you are willing to have the residue of your sentence commuted to submission to what is called here, ridiculous expression, reclamation treatment. Will you sign?" "Most certainly I will sign," I said, "sir, and very many thanks." So I was given an ink pencil and I signed my name, nice and flowy. The governor said, "Right, that's the lot, I think." The chief chasso said,
"The prison chaplain would like a word with him, sir."
So I was marched out and off down the corridor towards the wing chapel, toll-chocked on the back and the gulliver all the way by one of the chassos, but in a very light, yawny and bored manner, and I was marched across the wing chapel to the little cantora of the Charles, and then made to go in. The Charles was sitting at his desk, smelling loud and clear of a fine manivon of expensive cancers and scotch. He said, "Ah, little 6655321, be seated." And to the chassos, "Wait outside, eh?" Which they did. Then he spoke in a very like earnest way to me, saying, "One thing I want you to understand, boy, is that this is nothing to do with me. Were it expedient, I would protest about it, but it is not expedient. There is the question of my own career. There is the question of the weakness of my own voice when set against the shout of certain more powerful elements in the polity. Do I make myself clear?" He didn't, brothers, but I nodded that he did. Very hard ethical questions are involved, he went on. You are to be made into a good boy, 66553321. Never again will you have the desire to commit acts of violence or to offend in any way whatsoever against the state's peace. I hope you take all that in. I hope you are absolutely clear in your own mind about that. I said, oh, it will be nice to be good, sir. But I had a real horror show smack at that inside, brothers. He said, it may not be nice to be good, little 6655321. It may be horrible to be good. And when I say that to you, I realise how self-contradictory that sounds. I know I shall have many sleepless nights about this. What does God want? Does God want goodness or the choice of goodness? Is a man who chooses the bad perhaps in some way better than a man who has the good imposed upon him? Deep and hard questions, little 6655321. But all I want to say to you now is this. If at any time in the future you look back to these times and remember me, the lowest and humblest of all God's servitors, do not, I pray, think evil of me in your heart, thinking me in any way involved in what is now about to happen to you. And now, talking of praying, I realise sadly that there will be little point in praying for you. You are passing now to a region where you will be beyond the reach of the power of prayer. A terrible, terrible thing to consider. And yet, in a sense, in choosing to be deprived of the ability to make an ethical choice, you have, in a sense, really chosen the good. So, I shall like to think. So, God help us all, 6655321. I shall like to think. And then he began to cry. But I didn't really take much notice of that, brothers, only having a bit of a quiet smack inside, because you could vidy that he had been peating away at the old whiskey, and now he took a bottle from a cupboard in his desk and started to pour himself a real horror show bolshy slog into a very greasy and grasny glass. He downed it and then said, all may be well, who knows, God works in a mysterious way. Then he began to sing away a hymn in a real loud, rich gloss. Then the door opened and the chassos came in to toe-chop me back to my vonny cell, but the old Charles still went on singing this hymn. Well, the next morning I had to say goodbye to the old stadger, and I felt a malinky bit sad, as you always will when you have to leave a place you've, like, got used to. But I didn't go very far, oh, my brothers. I was punched and kicked along to the new white building just beyond the yard where we used to do our bit of exercise. This was a very new building, and it had a new cold-like sizey smell which gave you a bit of the shivers. I stood there in the horrible, bolshy, bare hall, and I got new vons sniffing away there with my, like, very sensitive morder or sniffer. These were like hospital vons, and the chelovec the chassos handed me over to had a white coat on, as he might be a hospital man. He signed for me, and one of the brutal chassos had brought me said, you watch this one, sir. A right brutal bastard he has been and will be again, in spite of all his sucking up to the prison chaplain and reading the Bible. But this new chelovic had real horror show blue glasses which, like, smiled when he govereted. He said, oh, we don't anticipate any trouble. We're going to be friends, aren't we? And he smiled with his glasses and his fine big rot which was full of shining white zubies, and I sort of took to this vec right away. Anyway, he passed me on to a, like, lesser vec in a white coat, and this one was very nice too, and I was led off to a very nice white clean bedroom with curtains and a bedside lamp and just the one bed in it, all for your humble narrator. So I had a real horror show inner smack at that, thinking I was really a very lucky young Mal Chickywick. I was told to take off my horrible prison platties, and I was given a really beautiful set of pyjamas, oh my brothers, in plain green, the height of bedwear fashion. And I was given a nice warm dressing gown too, and lovely twofles to put my bare nogas in. And I thought, well, Alex boy, little 6655321 as was, you have copped it lucky and no mistake. You are really going to enjoy it here. After I'd been given a nice chasha of real horror show coffee and some old gazettas and mags to look at while peating it, this first vec in white came in, the one who had, like, signed for me, and he said, "Aha, there you are." A silly sort of a vesh to say, but it didn't sound silly, this vec being so nice. "My name," he said, "is Dr. Branham. I'm Dr. Brodsky's assistant. With your permission, I'll just give you the usual brief overall examination." And he took the old stetho out of his right carmine. "We must make sure you're quite fit, mustn't we?" "Yes, indeed, we must." So while I lay there with my pyjama top off, and he did this, that and the other, I said, "What exactly is it, sir, that you're going to do?" "Oh," said Dr. Branham, his cold stetho going all down my back, "it's quite simple, really. We just show you some films." "Films?" I said. I could hardly believe my ukos, brothers. "As you may well understand. You mean," I said, "it will be just like going to the pictures?" "There'll be special films," said this Dr. Branham. "Very special films. You'll be having the first session this afternoon." "Yes," he said, getting up from bending over me. "You seem to be quite a fit young boy. A bit undernourished, perhaps. That will be the fault of the prison food. Put your pyjama top back on. After every meal," he said, sitting on the edge of the bed, "we shall be giving you a shot in the arm. That should help." I felt really grateful to this very nice Dr. Branham. I said, "Vitamins, sir, will it be?" "Something like that," he said, smiling, real horror show and friendly. "Just a jab in the arm after every meal." Then he went out. I lay on the bed thinking this was like real heaven, and I read some of the mags they'd given me. World Sport, Cine, this being a film mag, and Goal. Then I lay back on the bed and shut my glazies and thought how nice it was going to be out there again, Alex, with perhaps a nice easy job during the day, me being now too old for the old scollywoll, and then perhaps getting a new, like, gang together for the Notchy. And the first rabbit would be to get old Dim and Pete if they'd not been got already by the Millicents. This time I would be very careful not to get loveted. They were giving another, like, chance, me having done murder and all, and it would not be, like, fair to get loveted again after going to all this trouble to show me films that were going to make me a real good Malchick. I had a real horror show smack at everybody's, like, innocence, and I was smacking my Gulliver off when they brought in my lunch on a tray. The vec who brought it was the one who'd led me to this Malenki bedroom when I came into the Mesto, and he said, "It's nice to know somebody's happy." It was really a very nice appetising bit of pishka they laid out on the tray. 2 or 3 lomticks of light hot roast beef with mashed kartoffel and veg, and there was also ice cream and a nice hot chasha of chai. And there was even a cancer to smoke and a matchbox with one match in. So, this looked like it was the life, oh my brothers. Then, about 30 minutes after, while I was lying a bit sleepy on the bed, a woman nurse came in, a real nice young devotchka with real horror show grudies. I'd not seen such for 2 years, and she had a tray and a hypodermic. I said, "Ah, the old vitamins, eh?" And I click-clicked at her, but she took no notice. All she did was to slam the needle into my left arm, and then swish in went the vitamin stuff. Then she went out again, clack-clack on her high-heeled nogas. Then the white-coated vec, who was like a male nurse, came in with a wheelchair. I was a Malenki bit surprised to vidi that. I said, What giveth then, brother? I can walk, surely, to wherever we have to itty to. But he said, Best I push you there. And indeed, O my brothers, when I got off the bed, I found myself a malenky bit weak. It was the undernourishment, like Dr. Branham had said, all that horrible prison pishka. But the vitamins in the after-meal injection would put me right. No doubt at all about that, I thought. 4. Where I was wheeled to, brothers, was like no cine I'd ever vidded before. True enough, one wall was all covered with silver screen, and direct opposite was a wall with square holes in for the projector to project through, and there were stereo speakers stuck all over the mesto. But against the right-hand one of the other walls was a bank of all, like, little meters, and in the middle of the floor, facing the screen, was like a dentist's chair with all lengths of wire running from it. And I had to, like, crawl from the wheelchair to this, being given some help by another, like, male nurse vec in a white coat. Then I noticed that underneath the projection holes was, like, all frosted glass, and I thought I vidded shadows of, like, people moving behind it. And I thought I slooshed somebody cough. But then all I could, like, notice was how weak I seemed to be, and I put that down to changing over from prison pishka to this new rich pishka and the vitamins injected into me. Right, said the wheelchair-wheeling vec, now I'll leave you. The show will commence as soon as Dr. Brodsky arrives. Hope you enjoy it. To be truthful, brothers, I did not really feel that I wanted to vidy any film show this afternoon. I was just not in the mood. I would have liked much better to have a nice quiet spatchka on the bed, nice and quiet and all on my oddy knocky. I felt very limp. What happened now was that one white-coated vec strapped my Gulliver to a, like, headrest, singing to himself all the time some Vonnie Kelly pop song. What's this for? I said. And this vec replied, interrupting his light song an instant, that it was to keep my Gulliver still and make me look at the screen. But I said, I want to look at the screen. I've been brought here to vidy films, and vidy films I shall. And then the other white coat vec, there were three altogether, one of them a Devotchka who was like sitting at the bank of meters and twiddling with knobs, had a bit of a smack at that. He said, You never know. Oh, you never know. Trust us, friend. It's better this way. And then I found they were strapping my rookers to the chair arms and my nogas were like stuck to a footrest. It seemed a bit bazoomy to me, but I let them get on with what they wanted to get on with. If I was to be a free young Malchick again in a fortnight's time, I would put up with much in the meantime, oh my brothers. One vesh I did not like, though, was when they put, like, clips on the skin of my forehead so that my top glass lids were pulled up and up and up and I could not shut my glazies no matter how I tried. I tried to smack and said, This must be a real horror show film if you're so keen on my videoing it. And one of the white coat vex said, smacking, Horror show is right, friend. A real show of horrors. And then I had, like, a cap stuck on my Gulliver and I could vidy all wires running away from it, and they stuck a, like, suction pad on my belly and one on the old TikToker, and I could just about vidy wires running away from those. Then there was the shoom of a door opening, and you could tell some very important Chelovic was coming in by the way the white-coated undervex went all stiff. And then I vidded this Dr. Brodsky. He was a malenky vet, very fat, with all curly hair curling all over his Gulliver, and on his spuddy nose he had very thick otchkes. I could just vidy that he had a real horror show suit on, absolutely the height of fashion, and he had a very delicate and subtle von of operating theatres coming from him. With him was Dr. Branham, all smiling like, as though to give me confidence. Everything ready, said Dr. Brodsky in a very breathy galos. Then I could slooshy voices saying, right, 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 from like a distance, and then nearer too, Then there was a quiet, light humming shoom as though things had been switched on. And then the lights went out and there was your humble narrator and friend sitting alone in the dark, all on his frightened oddy-knocky, not able to move, nor shut his glazies, nor anything. And then, oh my brothers, the film show started off with some very grumpy atmosphere music coming from the speakers, very fierce and full of discord. And then, on the screen, the picture came on, but there was no title and no credits. What came on was a street, as it might have been any street in any town, and it was a real dark notchy, and the lamps were lit. It was a very good, like, professional piece of cine, and there were none of these flickers and blobs you get, say, when you video one of these dirty films in somebody's house in a back street. All the time, the music bumped out, very, like, sinister. And then you could video an old man coming down the street, very starry. And then there leapt out on this starry vec two male chicks, dressed in the height of fashion, as it was at this time. Still thin trousers, but no light cravat anymore. More of a real tie. And then they started to filly with him. You could slushy his screams and moans. Very realistic. And you could even get the, like, heavy breathing and panting of the two toll-chocking male chicks. They made a real pudding out of this starry vet, going crack, crack, crack at him with their fisty rookers, tearing his platties off and then finishing up by booting his nadjoy plot. This lay all crovy red in the grasny mud of the gutter, and then running off very scorry. Then there was the close-up Gulliver of this beaten-up starry vec, and the crovy flowed beautiful red. It's funny how the colours of the, like, real world only seem real when you vidi them on the screen. Now, all the time I was watching this, I was beginning to get very aware of a, like, not feeling all that well, and this I put down to the undernourishment and my stomach not quite ready for the rich pishka and vitamins I was getting here. But I tried to forget this, concentrating on the next film, which came on at once, my brothers, without any break at all. This time the film, like, jumped right away on a young Devotchka who has been given the old in-out by first one male chick, then another, then another, then another. She creeching away very grumpy through the speakers and, like, very pathetic and tragic music going on at the same time. This was real, very real, though if you thought about it properly, you couldn't imagine Ludi's actually agreeing to having all this done to them in a film. And if these films were made by the good or the state, you couldn't imagine them being allowed to take these films without, like, interfering with what was going on. So it must have been very clever what they call cutting or editing or some such vesh, for it was very real. And when it came to the sixth or seventh male chick leering and smecking and then going into it and the Devotchka creeching on the soundtrack like a bazoomni, then I began to feel sick. I had, like, pains all over and felt I could sick up and at the same time not sick up, and I began to feel, like, in distress, oh my brothers, being fixed rigid too on this chair. When this bit of film was over, I could slushy the goloss of this Dr. Brodsky from over by the switchboard saying, reaction about 12.5, promising, promising. Then we shot straight into another long tick of film, and this time it was of just a human litso, a very, like, pale human face held still and having different nasty veshes done to it. I was sweating a malenki bit with the pain in my guts and a horrible thirst and my Gulliver going throb, 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 and it seemed to me that if I could not vidi this bit of film, I would perhaps be not so sick, but I could not shut my glazies, and even if I tried to move my glaz balls about, I still could not get, like, out of the line of fire of this picture. So I had to go on videoing what was being done, and hearing the most ghastly creechings coming from this litso. I knew it could not really be real, but that made no difference. I was heaving away, but could not sick. Videoing first a Britva cut out an eye, then slice down the cheek, then go rip, rip, rip all over while red crovies shot onto the camera lens. Then all the teeth were like wrenched out with a pair of pliers, and the creaking and the blood were terrific. Then I slooshied this very pleased galos of Dr. Brodsky, going, "Excellent, excellent, excellent." The next long tick of film was of an old woman who kept a shop being kicked about amid very grumpy laughter by a lot of malchicks, and these malchicks broke up the shop and then set fire to it. You could vidi this poor, starry ptitsa trying to crawl out of the flames, screaming and creeching, but having had her leg broke by these malchicks kicking her, she could not move. So then all the flames went roaring round her, and you could vidi her agonising litso, like appealing through the flames and then disappearing in the flames, and then you could slooshy the most grumpy and agonised and agonising screams that ever came from a human galos. So this time I knew I had to sick up, so I creeched, I want to be sick, please let me be sick, please bring something for me to be sick into. But this Dr. Brodsky called back, "Imagination only. You've nothing to worry about. Next film coming up." That was perhaps meant to be a joke, for I heard a like smack coming from the dark. And then I was forced to vidi a most nasty film about Japanese torture. It was the 1939-45 war, and there were soldiers being fixed to trees with nails and having fires lit under them and having their yarbles cut off. And you even vidded a Gulliver being sliced off a soldier with a sword, and then with his head rolling about and the rot and the glazes looking alive still, the plot of this soldier actually ran about crovy like a fountain out of the neck, and then it dropped. And all the time there was very, very loud laughter from the Japanese. The pains I felt now in my belly and the headache and the thirst were terrible, and they all seemed to be coming out of the screen. So I creeched, "Stop the film, please, please, stop it, I can't stand any more." And then the galos of this Dr. Brodsky said, "Stop it? Stop it, did you say? Why, we've hardly started." And he and the others smacked quite loud. 5. I do not wish to describe, brothers, what other horrible veshes I was like forced to vidi that afternoon. The like minds of this Dr. Brodsky and Dr. Branham and the others in white coats. And remember, there was this Devotchka twiddling with the knobs and watching the meters. They must have been more cally and filthy than any prestutnik in the stager itself, because I did not think it was possible for any vet to even think of making films of what I was forced to vidi, all tied to this chair and my glazies made to be wide open. All I could do was to creech very crumpy for them to turn it off, and that like part drowned the noise of dratsing and fillying and also the music that went with it all. You can imagine it was like a terrible relief when I'd vidded the last bit of film and this Dr. Brodsky said in a very yawny and bored-like galos, "I think that should be enough for day one, don't you, Branham?" And there I was, with the light switched on, my Gulliver throbbing like a bolshy big engine that makes pain, and my rot all dry and cally inside, and feeling I could like sick up every bit of pishka I'd ever eaten, oh my brothers, since the day I was like weaned. "All right," said this Dr. Brodsky, "he can be taken back to his bed." Then he like patted me on the plecho and said, "Good, good, a very promising start," grinning all over his litso. Then he like waddled out, Dr. Branham after him. But Dr. Branham gave me a like very droogy and sympathetic type smile, as though he had nothing to do with all this vesh, but was like forced into it as I was. Anyhow, they freed my plot from the chair, and they let go the skin above my glazies so that I could open and shut them again, and I shut them, oh my brothers, with the pain and throb in my Gulliver. And then I was like carried to the old wheelchair and taken back to my Malenki bedroom. The undervec, who wheeled me, singing away at some hound and horny pop song so that I like snarled, "Shut it, thou!" But he only smacked and said, "Never mind, friend," and then sang louder. So I was put into the bed and still felt bolnoy, but could not sleep. But soon I started to feel that soon I might start to feel that I might soon start feeling just a malenky bit better. And then I was brought some nice hot chai with plenty of maloko and saccar, and peating that, I knew that that, like, horrible nightmare was in the past and all over. And then Dr. Branham came in, all nice and smiling. He said, "Well, by my calculations, you should be starting to feel all right again, yes?" "Sir," I said, like wary. I did not quite cope at what he was getting at, govereating about calculations, seeing that getting better from feeling bolnoy is like your own affair and nothing to do with calculations. He sat down, all nice and droogy, on the bed's edge and said, "Dr. Brodsky is pleased with you. You had a very positive response. Tomorrow, of course, there'll be two sessions, morning and afternoon, and I should imagine that you'll be feeling a bit limp at the end of the day. But we have to be hard on you. You have to be cured." I said, "You mean I have to sit through? You mean I have to look at..." "Oh, no," I said. "It was horrible." "Of course it was horrible," smiled Dr. Branham. "Violence is a very horrible thing. That's what you're learning now. Your body is learning it." "But," I said, "I don't understand. I don't understand about feeling sick like I did. I never used to feel sick before. I used to feel like... very the opposite. I mean, doing it or watching it, I used to feel real horror show. I just don't understand why or how or what." "Life is a very wonderful thing," said Dr. Branham in a light, very holy gloss. "The processes of life, the makeup of the human organism, who can fully understand these miracles? Dr. Brodsky is, of course, a remarkable man. What is happening to you now is what should happen to any normal, healthy human organism contemplating the action of the forces of evil, the workings of the principle of destruction. You are being made sane. You are being made healthy." "That I will not have," I said, "nor can understand at all. What you've been doing is to make me feel very, very ill." "Do you feel ill now?" he said, still with the old droogy smile on his lips. "Oh, drinking tea, resting, having a quiet chat with a friend? Surely you're not feeling anything but well." I, like, listened and felt for pain and sickness in my Gulliver and plot in a, like, cautious way, but it was true, brothers, that I felt real horror show and even wanting my dinner. "I don't get it," I said. "You must be doing something to me to make me feel ill." And I sort of frowned about that, thinking. "You felt ill this afternoon," he said, "because you're getting better. When we're healthy, we respond to the presence of the hateful with fear and nausea. You're becoming healthy, that's all. You'll be healthier still this time tomorrow." Then he patted me on the noga and went out, and I tried to puzzle the whole vesh out as best I could. What it seemed to me was that the wires and other veshes that were fixed to my plot perhaps were making me feel ill, and that it was all a trick, really. I was still puzzling out all this and wondering whether I should refuse to be strapped down to this chair tomorrow and start a real bit of dratzing with them all because I had my rights, when another Chelovec came in to see me. He was a, like, smiling Starivec who said he was what he called the discharge officer, and he carried a lot of bits of paper with him. He said, "Where will you go when you leave here?" I hadn't really thought about that sort of vesh at all, and it only now really began to dawn on me that I'd be a fine free Malchik very soon. And then I vidded that would only be if I played it everybody's way and did not start any dratzing and creeching and refusing and so on. I said, "Oh, I shall go home, back to my P and M." "Your..." He didn't get Nadsat talk at all, so I said, "To my parents in the dear old flat block?" I see, he said. And when did you last have a visit from your parents?
A month, I said, very near. They like suspended visiting day for a bit because of one press new pit getting some blasting powder smuggled in across the wires from his Ptitsa, a really Cali trick to play on the innocent, like punishing them as well. So it's like near a month since I had a visit.
I see, said this Vec. And have your parents been informed of your transfer and impending release?
That had a really lovely zvuk, that did, that Slovo release. I said, no. Then I said, it will be a nice surprise for them, that, won't it? Me just walking in through the door and saying, here I am, back, a free Vec again. Yes, real horror show.
Right, said the discharge officer Vec. We'll leave it at that. So long as you have somewhere to live. Now, there's the question of your having a job, isn't there?
And he showed me this long list of jobs I could have, but I thought, well, there would be time enough for that. A nice Malenki holiday first. I could do a crasting job soon as I got out and fill the old Carmens with Pretty Polly, but I would have to be very careful, and I would have to do the job all on my oddy knocky. I did not trust so-called droogs anymore. So I told this Vec to leave it a bit, and we would gover eat about it again. He said, right, then got ready to leave. He showed himself to be a very queer sort of a Vec, because what he did now was to, like, giggle and then say,
would you like to punch me in the face before I go?
I did not think I could possibly have sluiced that right, so I said, eh?
Would you, he giggled, like to punch me in the face before I go?
I frowned like at that, very puzzled, and said, why?
Oh, he said, just to see how you're getting on.
And he brought his litzo real near, a fat grin all over his rot. So I fisted up and went smack at this litzo, but he pulled himself away, real scorry, grinning still, and my rooker just punched air. Very puzzling, this was. And I frowned as he left, smacking his Gulliver off. And then, my brothers, I felt real sick again, just like in the afternoon, just for a couple of minutes. It then passed off scorry, and when they brought my dinner in, I found I had a fair appetite and was ready to crunch away at the roast chicken. But it was funny, that Starry Chelovec asking for a tolchok in the litzo, and it was funny feeling sick like that. What was even funnier was when I went to sleep that night, oh my brothers, I had a nightmare, and as you might expect, it was one of those bits of film I'd vidded in the afternoon. A dream or nightmare is really only like a film inside your Gulliver, except it is as though you could walk into it and be part of it. And this is what happened to me. It was a nightmare of one of the bits of film they showed me near the end of the afternoon-like session, all of smacking Malchiks doing the ultraviolet on a young Petitsa who was creeching away in her red crovy, her platties all razrezed real horror show. I was in this, fillying about, smacking away and being like the ringleader, dressed in the height of Nadsat fashion. And then, at the height of all this dratzing and tolchocking, I felt like paralysed and wanting to be very sick, and all the other Malchiks had a real grumpy smack at me. Then I was dratzing my way back to being awake all through my own crovy pints and quarts and gallons of it, and then I found myself in my bed in this room. I wanted to be sick, so I got out of the bed all trembly so as to go off down the corridor to the old vase. But behold, brothers, the door was locked, and turning round, I vidded for like the first raz that there were bars on the window, and so as I reached for the like pot in the Malenki cupboard beside the bed, I vidded that there would be no escaping from any of all this. Worse, I did not dare to go back into my own sleeping Gulliver. I soon found that I did not want to be sick after all, but then I was poogly of getting back into bed to sleep. But soon I fell smack into sleep and did not dream any more.
6.
Stop it, stop it, stop it! I kept on creeching out, turn it off, you grasny bastards, for I can stand no more.
It was the next day, brothers.
and I had truly done my best morning and afternoon to play it their way and sit like a horror show smiling cooperative Malchick in the chair of torture while they flashed nasty bits of ultraviolence on the screen, my glazies clipped open to vidi all, my plot and rookers and nogas fixed to the chair so I could not get away. What I was being made to vidi now was not really a vesh that I would have thought to be too bad before, it being only three or four Malchicks crasting in a shop and filling their carmans with cutter, at the same time fillying about with the creeching starry petitza running the shop, toll-chocking her and letting the red crovy flow, but the throb and like crash, 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 crash in my gulliver and the wanting to be sick and the terrible dry rasping thirstiness in my rot, all were worse than yesterday. "Oh, I've had enough," I cried. "It's not fair, you vonny sods." And I tried to struggle out of the chair, but it was not possible, me being as good as stuck to it.
"First class," screeched out this Dr. Brodsky. "You're doing really well. Just one more and then we're finished."
What it was now was the starry 1939-45 war again, and it was a very blobby and liney and crackly film you could vidi had been made by the Germans. It opened with German eagles and the Nazi flag with that like crooked cross that all Malchicks at school love to draw, and there were very haughty and nadmany-like German officers walking through streets that were all dust and bomb holes and broken buildings. Then you were allowed to vidi ludies being shot against walls, officers giving the orders, and also horrible Nadjoy plots left lying in gutters, all like cages of bare ribs and white thin nogas. Then there were ludies being dragged off creeching, though not on the soundtrack, my brothers, the only sound being music, and being toll-chocked while they were being dragged off. Then I noticed, in all my pain and sickness, what music it was that, like, crackled and boomed on the soundtrack, and it was Ludwig van, the last movement of the Fifth Symphony, and I creeched like Bazzuni at that. "Stop," I creeched, "stop, you grasny, disgusting sods, it is a sin, that's what it is, a filthy, unforgivable sin, you bratchneys." They didn't stop right away because there was only a minute or two more to go, ludies being beaten up and all crovy, then more firing squads, then the old Nazi flag, and the end. But when the lights came on, this Dr. Brodsky and also Dr. Branham was standing in front of me, and Dr. Brodsky said, "What's all this about sin, eh?"
"That," I said, very sick, "using Ludwig van like that. He did no harm to anyone. Beethoven just wrote music."
And then I was really sick, and they had to bring a bowl that was in the shape of like a kidney.
"Music," said Dr. Brodsky, like musing. "So you're keen on music? I know nothing about it myself. It's a useful emotional heightener. That's all I know. Well, well. What do you think about that, eh, Branham?"
"It can't be helped," said Dr. Branham. "Each man kills the thing he loves, as the poet Prisoner said. Here's the punishment element, perhaps. The governor ought to be pleased."
"Give me a drink," I said, "for bog's sake."
"Loosen him," ordered Dr. Brodsky. "Fetch him a carafe of ice-cold water."
So then these underbecks got to work, and soon I was peating gallons and gallons of water, and it was like heaven, oh my brothers. Dr. Brodsky said,
"You seem a sufficiently intelligent young man. You seem, too, to be not without taste. You've just got this violence thing, haven't you? Violence and theft, theft being an aspect of violence."
I didn't govery a single slovo, brothers. I was still feeling sick, though getting a malenky bit better now, but it had been a terrible day.
"Now then," said Dr. Brodsky, "how do you think this is done? Tell me, what do you think we're doing to you?"
"You're making me feel ill," I said. "I'm ill when I look at those filthy pervert films of yours. But it's not
really the films that's doing it, but I feel that if you'll stop these films, I'll stop feeling ill.
Right, said Dr. Brodsky. It's association, the oldest educational method in the world. And what really causes you to feel ill?
These grazzy, sodding veshies that come out of my Gulliver and my plot, I said. That's what it is.
Quaint, said Dr. Brodsky, light smiling. The dialect of the tribe. Do you know anything of its provenance, Branham?
Odd bits of old rhyming slang? Said Dr. Branham, who did not look quite so much like a friend anymore. A bit of gypsy talk, too, but most of the roots are Slav, propaganda, subliminal penetration.
All right, all right, all right,
said Dr. Brodsky, like impatient and not interested anymore.
Well, he said to me, it isn't the wires. It's nothing to do with what's fastened to you. Those are just for measuring your reactions. What is it, then?
I vidded then, of course, what a bazoomy shoot I was not to notice that it was the hypodermic shots in the rooker.
Oh, I creeched. Oh, I vidde all now. A filthy Kelly Vonnie trick, an act of treachery. Sod you, and you won't do it again.
I'm glad you've raised your objections now, said Dr. Brodsky. Now we can be perfectly clear about it. We can get this stuff of Ludovico's into your system in many different ways. Orally, for instance, but the subcutaneous method is the best. Don't fight against it, please. There's no point in your fighting. You can't get the better of us.
Grazny brachnies,
I said, like snivelling. Then I said,
I don't mind about the ultraviolence and all that cow. I can put up with that, but it's not fair on the music. It's not fair. I should feel ill when I'm slooshying lovely Ludwig van and G.F. Handel and the others. All that shows you're an evil lot of bastards and I shall never forgive you, sods.
They both looked a bit like thoughtful. Then Dr. Brodsky said,
delimitation is always difficult. The world is one, life is one. The sweetest and most heavenly of activities partake in some measure of violence. The act of love, for instance, music, for instance. You must take your chance, boy. The choice has been all yours.
I didn't understand all these slovos, but now I said, you needn't take it any further, sir. I changed my tune a malenky bit in my cunning way. You've proved to me that all this dratsing and ultraviolence and killing is wrong, wrong, and terribly wrong. I've learnt my lesson, sirs. I see now what I've never seen before. I'm cured, praise God. And I raised my glazies in a like holy way to the ceiling. But both these doctors shook their gullivers like sadly, and Dr. Brodsky said,
you're not cured yet. There's still a lot to be done. Only when your body reacts promptly and violently to violence as to a snake, without further help from us, without medication, only then.
I said, but sirs, I see that it's wrong. It's wrong because it's against like society. It's wrong because every vec on earth has the right to live and be happy without being beaten and toll-chocked and knifed. I've learnt a lot. Oh, really, I have.
Dr. Brodsky had a loud, long smack at that, showing all his white zoobies, and said,
the heresy of an age of reason, or some such slovos. I see what is right, and I approve, but I do what is wrong. No, no, my boy, you must leave it all to us. But be cheerful about it. It will soon be all over. In less than a fortnight now, you'll be a free man.
Then he patted me on the plecho. Less than a fortnight. Oh, my brothers and friends, it was like an age. It was like from the beginning of the world to the end of it. To finish the 14 years with remission in the stature would have been nothing to it. Every day it was the same. When the Dvotchka with the hypodermic came round, though, 4 days after this gover-eating with Dr. Brodsky and Dr. Branham, I said, oh, no, you won't. And toll-chocked her on the rooker, and the syringe went tinkle-clatter onto the floor. That was like to vidy what they would do. What they did, was to get 4 or 5 real bolshy white-coated bastards of Undervex to hold me down on the bed, toll-chocking me with grinny Litzos close to mine, and then this nurse Petitza said, "You wicked, naughty little devil, you," while she jabbed my rooker with another syringe and squirted this stuff in real brutal and nasty, and then I was wheeled off exhausted to this, like, hell cine as before. Every day, my brothers, these films were like the same, all kicking and toll-chocking and red crovy dripping off Litzos and plots and spattering all over the camera lenses. It was usually grinning and smecking malchicks in the height of Nadsat fashion, or else tee-hee-heeing Jap torturers or brutal Nazi kickers and shooters. And each day, the feeling of wanting to die with the sickness and Gulliver pains and aches in the zoobies and horrible, horrible thirst grew really worse, until one morning I tried to defeat the bastards by crash, crash, crashing my Gulliver against the wall so that I should toll-chop myself unconscious, but all that happened was I felt sick with vidying that this kind of violence was like the violence in the film, so I was just exhausted and was given the injection and was wheeled off like before. And then there came a morning when I woke up and had my breakfast of eggs and toast and jam and very hot milky chai, and then I thought, it can't be much longer now. Now must be very near the end of the time. I have suffered to the heights and cannot suffer any more. And I waited and waited, brothers, for this nurse Petitza to bring in the syringe, but she did not come. And then the white-coated undervet came and said, "Today, old friend, we are letting you walk." "Walk," I said, "where?" "To the usual place," he said. "Yes, yes, look not so astonished. You are to walk to the films, me with you, of course. You are no longer to be carried in a wheelchair." "But," I said, "how about my horrible morning injection?" For I was really surprised at this, brothers, they being so keen on pushing this Ludovico Vesh into me, as they said, "Don't I get that horrible sticky stuff rammed into my poor suffering rooker any more?" "All over," like smacked this Vec, "forever and ever, amen. You're on your own now, boy, walking and all to the Chamber of Horrors, but you're still to be strapped down and made to see. Come on then, my little tiger." And I had to put my overgown and toofles on and walk down the corridor to the, like, cinemesto. Now, this time, oh my brothers, I was not only very sick, but very puzzled. There it was again. All the old ultraviolence and Vex with their Gullivers smashed and torn, crovy dripping Petitzas screeching for mercy, the like private and individual fillying and nastiness. Then there were the prison camps and the Jews and the grey light foreign streets full of tanks and uniforms and Vex going down in withering rifle fire, this being the public side of it. And this time I could blame nothing for me feeling sick and thirsty and full of aches except what I was forced to vidy, my glazies still being clipped open and my nogas and plot fixed to the chair, but this set of wires and other veshies no longer coming out of my plot and Gulliver. So what could it be but the films I was vidying that were doing this to me? Except, of course, brothers, that this Ludovico stuff was like a vaccination. And there it was, cruising about in my crovy, so that I would be sick always, forever and ever, amen, whenever I vidded any of this ultraviolence. So now I squared my rot and went boo-hoo-hoo. And the tears, like, blotted out what I was forced to vidy in, like, all blessed, runny, silvery dewdrops. But these white-coat brachnies were scorry with their tashtooks to wipe the tears away, saying, "There, there, Washam's all weepy-weepy den." And there it was again, all clear before my glazies, these Germans prodding like beseeching and weeping Jews, Vex and Chinas and Malchiks and Dvochkas, into mestos where they would all snuff it of poison gas. Boo-hoo-hoo, I had to go again, and along they came to wipe the tears off, very scorry, so I should not miss one solitary vesh of what they were showing. It was a terrible and horrible day, oh my brothers and only friends. I was lying on the bed, all alone, that notchy, after my dinner of fat, thick mutton stew and fruit pie and ice cream, and I thought to myself, hell, hell, hell. There might be a chance for me if I get out now. I had no weapon, though. I was allowed no Britva here, and I had been shaved every other day by a fat, bald-headed Vec who came to my bed before breakfast, two white-coated Brachnys standing by to vidy I was a good, non-violent Malchik. The nails on my rookers had been scissored and filed real short so I could not scratch, but I was still scorry on the attack, though they had weakened me down, brothers, to a light shadow of what I had been in the old free days. So now I got off the bed and went to the locked door and began to fist it real horror show and hard, creeching at the same time.
Oh, help, help, I'm sick, I'm dying. Doctor, 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 quick, please. Oh, I'll die, I know I shall. Help.
My gorlo was real dry and sore before anyone came. Then I heard Nogas coming down the corridor and a like grumbling galos, and then I recognised the galos of the white-coated Vec who brought my pishka and, like, escorted me to my daily room. He, like, grumbled.
What is it? What goes on? What's your little nasty game in there?
Oh, I'm dying,
I, like, moaned.
Oh, I have a ghastly pain in my side. Appendicitis, it is. Oh!
Appendy shite house, grumbled this Vec. And then to my joy, brothers, I could slushy the light clank of keys.
If you're trying it, little friend, my friends and me will beat and kick you all through the night. Then he opened up and brought in like the sweet air of the promise of my freedom. Now, I was like behind the door when he pushed it open, and I could vidy him in the corridor light looking round for me, puzzled. Then I raised my two fisties to toll-chock him on the neck, nasty, and then, I swear, as I sort of vidded him in advance, lying moaning or out, 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 and felt the, like, joy rise in my guts, it was then that this sickness rose in me as it might be a wave, and I felt a horrible fear as if I was really going to die. I, like, tottered over to the bed, going, and the Vec, who was not in his white coat but an overgown, vidded clear enough what I had had in mind, for he said,
well, everything's a lesson, isn't it? Learning all the time, as you could say. Come on, little friend, get up from that bed and hit me. I want you to, yes, really, a real good crack across the jaw. Oh, I'm dying for it, really I am. But all I could do, brothers, was just lay there, sobbing, boo-hoo-hoo. Scum, like sneered this Vec now. Filth. And he pulled me up by the scruff of my pyjama top, me being very weak and limp, and he raised and swung his right rooker so that I got a fair old toll chock clean on the litzo. That, he said, is for getting me out of my bed, you young dirt. And he wiped his rookers against each other, swish, swish, and went out. Crunch, crunch, went the key in the lock. And what, brothers, I had to escape into sleep from then was the horrible and wrong feeling that it was better to get the hit than give it. If that Vec had stayed, I might even have, like, presented the other cheek.
7. I could not believe, brothers, what I was told. It seemed that I had been in that Vonnie Mesto for near ever and would be there for near ever more. But it had always been a fortnight, and now they said the fortnight was near up. They said, tomorrow, little friend, out, out, out. And they made with the old thumb, like, pointing to freedom. And then the white-coated Vec, who had toll-chocked me and who had still brought me my trays of pishka and, like, escorted me to my everyday torture, said, but you still have one real big day in front of you. It's to be your passing-out day. And he had a leery smack at that. I expected this morning that I would be ittying as usual to the cinemesto in my pyjamas and twofles and overgown, but no, this morning I was given my shirt and underveshies and my platties of the night and my horror show kick boots all lovely and washed or ironed or polished, and I was even given
my cutthroat Britva that I had used in those old happy days for fillying and dratsing. So I gave with the puzzled frown at this as I got dressed, but the white-coated undervet just like grinned and would gover eat nothing, oh my brothers. I was led quite kindly to the same old mesto, but there were changes there. Curtains had been drawn in front of the cine screen, and the frosted glass under the projection holes was no longer there, it having perhaps been pushed up or folded to the sides like blind or shutters. And where there had been just the noise of coughing, like the shadows of Ludi's, was now a real audience, and in this audience there were Litzos I knew. There was the Stadger Governor, and the Holy Man, the Charlie, or Charles as he was called, and the Chief Chasso, and this very important and well-dressed Chelovec, who was the Minister of the Interior, or Inferior. All the rest I did not know. Dr. Brodsky and Dr. Branham were there, though not now white-coated. Instead, they were dressed as doctors would dress, who were big enough to want to dress in the height of fashion. Dr. Branham just stood, but Dr. Brodsky stood and govereated in a like learned manner to all the ludies assembled. When he vidded me coming in, he said, "Aha! At this stage, gentlemen, we introduce the subject himself. He is, as you will perceive, fit and well-nourished. He comes straight from a night's sleep and a good breakfast, undrugged, unhypnotized. Tomorrow we send him with confidence out into the world again, as decent a lad as you would meet on a May morning, unvicious, unviolent, if anything, as you will observe, inclined to the kindly word and the helpful act. What a change is here, gentlemen, from the wretched hoodlum the state committed to unprofitable punishment some 2 years ago. Unchanged after 2 years. Unchanged, do I say? Not quite. Prison taught him the false smile, the rubbed hands of hypocrisy, the fawning, greased, obsequious leer. Other vices it taught him as well as confirming him in those he had long practised before. But, gentlemen, enough of words. Actions speak louder than. Action now. Observe all."
I was a bit dazed by all this gover-eating, and I was trying to grasp in my mind that, like, all this was about me. Then all the lights went out, and then there came on two, like, spotlights shining from the projection squares, and one of them was full on your humble and suffering narrator, and into the other spotlight there walked a bolshy big Chelovec I had never vidded before. He had a lardy like litzo and a moustache and like strips of hair pasted over his near-bald gulliver. He was about 30 or 40 or 50, some old age like that, starry. He itted up to me, and the spotlight itted with him, and soon the two spotlights had made like one big pool. He said to me, very sneery, "Hello, heap of dirt, poo. You don't wash much, judging from the horrible smell." Then, as if he was like dancing, he stamped on my nogas, left, right. Then he gave me a fingernail flick on the nose that hurt like bazoomy and brought the old tears to my glazies. Then he twisted at my left uko like it was a radio dial. I could slushy titters and a couple of real horror show haw haw haws coming from like the audience. My nose and nogas and ear holes stung and pained like bazoomy. So I said, "What did you do that to me for? I've never done wrong to you, brother." "Oh," this vex said, "I do this," flick flicked nose again, "and that," twisting smarting ear hole, "and the other," stamped nasty on right noga, "because I don't care for your horrible type. And if you want to do anything about it, start, start, please do." Now, I knew that I'd have to be real scorry and get my cutthroat Britva out before this horrible killing sickness whooshed up and turned the like joy of battle into feeling I was going to snuff it. But, oh brothers, as my rooker reached for the Britva in my inside carmen,
I got this, like, picture in my mind's glazzy of this insulting Chelovek howling for mercy with the red, red crovy all streaming out of his rot, and hot after this picture the sickness and dryness and pains were rushing to overtake, and I vidded that I'd have to change the way I felt about this rotten Vec, very, very scorry indeed. So I felt in my carmens for cigarettes or for Pretty Polly, and oh, my brothers, there was not either of these veshes. I said, like all howly and blubbery, I'd like to give you a cigarette, brother, but I don't seem to have any. This Vec went, wah, wah, boo, hoo, hoo, cry, baby. Then he flick, flick, flicked with his bolshy horny nail at my nose again, and I could slooshy very loud smacks of, like, mirth coming from the dark audience. I said, real desperate, trying to be nice to this insulting and hurtful Vec to stop the pains and sickness coming up, please let me do something for you, please. And I felt in my carmens, but could find only my cutthroat Britva. So I took this out and handed it to him and said, please take this, please, a little present, please have it. But he said, keep your stinking bribes to yourself. You can't get round me that way. And he banged at my rooker, and my cutthroat Britva fell on the floor. So I said, please, I must do something. Shall I clean your boots? Look, I'll get down and lick them. And my brothers, believe it or kiss my sherries, I got down on my knees and pushed my red Yatzik out a mile and a half to lick his grasny, vonny boots. But all this Vec did was to kick me, not too hard, on the rot. So then it seemed to me that it would not bring on the sickness and pain if I just gripped his ankles with my rookers tight round them and brought this Grasny Brachny down to the floor. So I did this, and he got a real bolshy surprise coming down crack amid loud laughter from the Vonny audience. But vidying him on the floor, I could feel the whole horrible feeling coming over me. So I gave him my rooker to lift him up, scorry, and up he came. Then just as he was going to give me a real nasty and earnest tolchok on the litzo, Dr. Brodsky said, all right, that will do very well. Then this horrible Vec sort of bowed and danced off like an actor while the lights came up on me blinking and with my rot square for howling. Dr. Brodsky said to the audience, our subject is, you see, impelled towards the good by, paradoxically, being impelled towards evil. The intention to act violently is accompanied by strong feelings of physical distress. To counter these, the subject has to switch to a diametrically opposed attitude. Any questions?
Choice, rumbled a rich, deep gloss. I vidded it belonged to the prison Charlie. He has no real choice, has he? Self-interest, fear of physical pain, drove him to that grotesque act of self-abasement. Its insincerity was clearly to be seen. He ceases to be a wrongdoer. He ceases also to be a creature capable of moral choice.
These are subtleties, like smiled Dr. Brodsky. We are not concerned with motive, with the higher ethics. We are concerned only with cutting down crime.
And, chipped in this bolshy, well-dressed minister, with relieving the ghastly congestion in our prisons. Hear, hear, said somebody. There was a lot of govereating and arguing then, and I just stood there, brothers, like completely ignored by all these ignorant brachneys. So I creeched out,
me! 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 How about me? Where do I come into all this? Am I, like, just some animal? Or dog?
And that started them off govereating real loud and throwing slovos at me, so I creeched louder still, creeching, am I just to be like a clockwork orange? I didn't know what made me use those slovos, brother, which just came, like, without asking, into my gulliver, and that shut all those Vec up for some reason, for a minute or two. Then one very thin, starry professor-type Chelovek stood up, his neck like all cables carrying, like, power from his gulliver to his plot, and he said, You have no cause to grumble, boy. You made your choice, and all this is a consequence of your choice. Whatever now ensues is what you yourself have chosen. And the prison Charlie screeched out, "Oh, if only I could believe that!" And you could vidy the governor give him a look like meaning that he would not climb so high in light prison religion as he thought he would. Then loud arguing started again, and then I could slushy the Slovo love being thrown around, the prison Charles himself creeching as loud as any about perfect love casteth out fear and all that cow. And now Dr. Brodsky said, smiling all over his litso, "I am glad, gentlemen, that this question of love has been raised. Now we shall see in action a manner of love that was thought to be dead with the Middle Ages." And then the lights went down and the spotlights came on again, one on your poor and suffering friend and narrator, and into the other their light rolled or sidled the most lovely young Devotchka you could ever hope in all your Jeezny, oh my brothers, to vidy. That is to say, she had real horror show grudies, all of which you could like vidy, she having on platties which came down, down, down off her plechos, her nogas were like bog in his heaven, and she walked like to make you groan in your quishkas, and yet her litso was a sweet, smiling, young, like, innocent litso. She came up towards me with the light, like it was the light of heavenly grace and all that cow coming with her. And the first thing that flashed into my Gulliver was that I would like to have her right down there on the floor with the old in-out, real savage but scorry as a shot, came the sickness, like a light detective that had been watching round a corner and now followed to make his Grezny arrest. And now the von of lovely perfume that came off her made me want to think of starting to light heave in my quishkas, so I knew I had to think of some new light way of thinking about her before all the pain and thirstiness and horrible sickness came over me real horror show and proper. So I creeched out, "Oh, most beautiful and beauteous of Devotchkas, I throw like my heart at your feet for you to like trample all over. If I had a rose, I would give it to you. If it was all rainy and Cali now on the ground, you could have my platties to walk on so as not to cover your dainty nogas with filth and cow." And as I was saying all this, oh my brothers, I could feel the sickness like slinking back. "Let me," I creeched, "worship you and be like your helper and protector from the wicked-like world." Then I thought of the right Slovo and felt better for it, saying, "Let me be like your true knight." And down I went again on the old knees, bowing and like scraping. And then I felt real shooty and dim, it having been like an act again, for this Devotchka smiled and bowed to the audience, like danced off, the lights coming up to a bit of applause, and the glazies of some of these starry vecs in the audience were like popping out at this young Devotchka with dirty and like unholy desire, oh my brothers. "He will be your true Christian," Dr. Brodsky was screeching out, "ready to turn the other cheek, ready to be crucified rather than crucify, sick to the very heart at the thought of even killing a fly." And that was right, brothers, because when he said that, I thought of killing a fly and felt just that tiny bit sick, but I pushed the sickness and pain back by thinking of the fly being fed with bits of sugar and looked after like a bleeding pet and all that cow. "Reclamation," he creeched, "joy before the angels of God." The point is, this minister of the inferior was saying real grumpy, that it works. "Oh," the prison Charlie said, like sighing, "it works all right. God help the lot of us."
This ends Disc 4.